Kevin Virg, and I'm joined, as always, by my smart, talented, handsome co-host, Devin D'Agostino. Devin, how are you?
I am in person, and maybe that's why my smart, talent, and handsomeness is shining even brighter today.
That's true, Devin. You're in my apartment.
In your apartment?
Yeah, my apartment that's on 57th and 5th Avenue.
I thought it was on 57th and 6th Avenue, the 4th floor, apartment 1, east side door.
Yeah, you went to that apartment before you came here.
Right.
And that was...
And we recorded an episode, and it was pretty good.
What song did you do?
We did Artist Only, actually.
Really?
We went through the whole thing. We didn't actually record at all. We just had a conversation.
Oh, okay. So you just talked to a guy.
Just talked to a guy.
Okay. I hope you save some for this episode.
We'll see.
Well, in this episode, Devin and I are going to stop making sense. And what that means is every single episode, Devin and I choose a talking head song to analyze and ponder. And we let our minds wander to uncharted realms of science and comedy and music. And we answer such burning questions as who? Who took the money away? Where is my common sense? And where is that large automobile? All this and more on this episode of Devin and Kevin Stop Making Sense. Devin, what song are we doing this week?
This week we are doing Artist Only off Talking Head's second album. I don't think I shared with you why I picked it.
Why did you pick this song?
I went to Stop Making Sense in theaters, which was fantastic. Amazing experience. I hear it's coming back in theaters. One of the songs they played, because while they were getting the movie ready, they were playing a bunch of Talking Head songs. It was really cool. People were dancing down by the screen. And I walked in, and Artist Only was playing, but I couldn't remember the song. And it was, like, really groovy. I'm like, what song is this? Shazam has Artist Only. I hadn't listened to Artist Only forever, and I was like, what a cool song. We should discuss this.
Well, let's give a listen to Artist Only for just a minute, and we'll hop back into the song. When you walked in to see Stop Making Sense and you heard or finally discovered that the song was Artist Only, did you take pause and said, well, maybe this premiere is only for artists?
Oh.
But you are an artist, wouldn't you say?
Depends. How do you define an artist?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
You first.
Okay, I'm going to say an artist is someone who creates.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would a birthing mother be an artist? Not to just throw a wrench at things, I'm just curious.
Oh, no, please. Interesting. What if I said create from the brain?
Creates from the brain.
Yeah. And then Zeus birthing Athena
from
his brain would be doing both types of creation.
Yeah. Well, what if I said it's creating from the soul?
From the soul.
Yeah.
Ooh. Then the birthing mother, because are we just an extension of the souls of our parents?
Wow.
Yeah, we went real quick.
That was so fast. That's interesting. Well, I think the idea of making something from the soul or the mind will be maybe a through line that we can use to break down this song, especially a song that comes from more songs about buildings and food. Feels so logical and not really soul. I remember on one episode you said that new wave music is rock without the blues. Maybe a Talking Head song in the form of Artists Only was made more from the brain or more from the soul?
From the soul, it feels like a very straightforward album. A lot of the lyrics are very straightforward, and actually something I was going to talk about later, but I'll bring into the conversation now because I think it is totally obvious connection to make, but obviously this song, and we'll go into the lyrics a little deeper, goes into that trope of like the tortured artist. Mm. You familiar with that trope?
I'm familiar with the trope, but maybe describe it for someone who definitely hasn't, although I definitely have.
Okay. It's the image of an artist who's tortured by the work they do, that creating is something they need to do, it's like a biologic necessity, but it comes at a price. So when we think of, the epitome of this is probably Vincent van Gogh. who makes this amazing artwork, but he's suffering, chops off his own ear, and then commits suicide. And I think we see figures like this with Hemingway, Sylvia Plath, Kurt Cobain. So this idea of someone who creates amazing works, but at the expense of maybe their soul, but we can get to that in a little bit. But anyway, I was looking into where this idea of the tortured artist came from. And the earliest sort of reference to it was from Plato. So we're getting into philosophy right away. But Plato said this. He said that madness is a gift from heaven, something which comes from God, whereas sober sense is human. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you think that Aristotle would not like Stop Making Sense?
I don't think so, no.
Hmm.
Yeah. People who go through states of madness, they've almost been possessed by some divine power, and that's what allows them to create such amazing works, but at the expense of their humanity.
Hmm. People that get possessed by God. We've talked about this in the context of Talking Head songs when we discussed certain songs of Remain in Light and also using the speaking in tongues where we seem like someone loses control because they're so spiritual. Right. So that might be an example of that madness coming from.
We talked about like the glossalia and that it's pure almost creativity, but it's not the person doing it themselves. They've been possessed by some other power and they're just allowing that to flow through them.
I like to call myself an artist.
You are.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It's almost embarrassing to say out loud. I have a book right next to me called The Artist's Way. It's by Julia Cameron. And it's all about identifying yourself and unlocking your inner artist. I would say it's incredibly influential, not only for me, but for many true artists come out in support of this book and this process. And a lot of it is just identifying with the artist inside you, but also a lot of it is acting as a vessel for art, that we really don't have a choice what the art comes. We shouldn't judge it. We should silence the censor inside of us that allows the art to come out. Are the people who are allowed to listen to this or really understand it only the artists that are going to get it?
Think about Michelangelo. So Vasari in the Renaissance writes these Lives of the Artists, and he really popularizes the idea of a tortured artist. One of my favorite is like Paolo Uccello, who was the first guy to really explore perspective in Renaissance art. Vasari says that his wife is so frustrated with him because all he does is spend every night awake working on perspective, and he says about perspective, and I just like this quote, "Oh, what a lovely thing this perspective is," which is such an interesting thing. It's like, oh, like what a beautiful thing this perspective. He's obsessed with it, but in a positive way. Why I brought up Vasari is because I think about Michelangelo. And Michelangelo says that he is releasing the sculpture from the block of marble. So the sculpture is already there, and it's his job to take it out. So again, it's sort of making himself a passive agent in the act of creativity. That the creative thing is out there, and he just needs to be the vessel by which it comes. So I was looking into some studies that I'll talk a little bit more about later on where does creativity come from in the brain and was associated with. And this idea of the tortured artist, is there something to rationalize it? And some psychologists said on this idea of the tortured artist is that basically because we associate this tortured artist with potentially people with bipolarism or depression, sort of neurodiverse people being more likely to engage in creativity. And what this one scientist said, their rationale for it was basically the fact that in a lot of these disorders, we have less inhibition. So that creative part of us, we're better able to release because we almost don't have that check on it, or we don't have that barrier that says we shouldn't say this.
Well, using that and applying it to Talking Heads, it's become more widely known in the current state of things that David Byrne has autism to some sort of extent. He's talked about it, that he has, you know, some sort of on the artistic spectrum. Maybe that is why he's able to make the music that he does, move around and dance in front of large crowds like he does, because that sort of inhibition is lost to him. To touch on the second one about releasing the sculpture from the marble, a wise man once said, you gotta taste the marble, you gotta date the marble, you gotta be the marble. And I always live by that.
That's fantastic. It. End it there. Perfect.
All right. Thank you all so very much. This has been Devin and Kevin Stop Making Sense. Devin, how are you going to stay hungry?
I'm going to watch another episode of SpongeBob tonight.
Excellent. That was from SpongeBob, by the way. Everyone have a great day. Okay, we're back. now, I do want to say one more thing.
Yeah. Say two more.
Okay, I'll say two more. The first thing is that when Talking Heads were forming, 75 and 76, when they were creating these at the Rhode Island School of Design, they went by the Artistics before they moved to New York. I think it's a lot to live up to be called the Artistics.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because actually when I was having this discussion with people about Stop Making Sense, another person in the group was very familiar, grew up with Talking Heads. And she referred to the film Stop Making Sense as like almost an experimental art film, which I had never considered, because we think of like, I don't know, like Dadaism, like those really crazy out there things you'd see in a modern art museum and pretend to like, but really be like, this is dumb. But I genuinely like Stop Making Sense. I'm sorry, Andy Warhol or whoever made... Who was the guy who made those videos? He would just like videotape someone sleeping for 12 hours and they have that going on at the MoMA sometimes.
Me.
It was you. Oh, yeah, impressive.
No, that wasn't me, for the record.
I think it was Andy. It's not Andy Warhol, but let's just say it was.
Okay, let's say it was.
Yeah.
Let's give him more credit.
Great album.
Lou Reed and John Cale do this sort of reflective album on Andy Warhol's life. They make this entire album just about like Andy Warhol and his life from his perspective. It's fantastic.
Okay, Lou Reed, John Cale, New York City-based musicians, Andy Warhol, another like true artist, Michelangelo. We're all saying these. Are they equitable? Are they... Oh, they're both artists. They're all artists. Michelangelo, Andy Warhol, throw in a musician like Lou Reed. All artists equally?
And you know what? We gotta get back to that definition of an artist, and I've been rethinking it because like, why do I perceive you as an artist and not myself? Well, first, I think you create some fantastic stuff, like the music that everyone's listening to. I like to draw in my free time, right? I like to sketch dinosaurs mostly. But, you know, in a cool way, not in a nerdy way.
Yeah, definitely in a cool way.
For, like, I try to get the anatomy. I'm thinking one day when I'm on a dig site, a paleontology dig, you know, you have to do detailed sketches. So why am I rationalizing it? Maybe this gets into our idea of an artist. But the thing is that I don't share what I create. And maybe I think what differentiates, because I think we're all, people are constantly creating. And sometimes just like creating something, but maybe because of those restraints we have societally or individually, not releasing those creative ideas. But I don't share what I create. And I think what I differentiate an artist from other people is the idea that you're actually sharing what you're producing.
That's important. Okay, that's important, because I feel like the lyrical elements of these songs, if maybe we can start to take that idea and move into the lyric. You can't see until it's finished, David Byrne says in the second verse. Does art need to be shared to be art? It helps to at least become a famous or profitable or livable artist. You have to share it eventually. But also, there are tons of really talented people, I would say including yourself, that have art that is plenty good enough to be shared to someone, and not just show your parents or your girlfriend or your friend. Yeah, it's someone's gonna be into it. You know, both you and I live in New York City. People say this about New York, people say this about when you go to college. You know, there's people for everyone. You know, like, just put yourself out there and there's someone that's gonna appreciate it. And I think I agree with that. I'm not sure if art needs to be shared to be art. I don't think so. What do you think?
Well, it's almost like that, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? So we could get really philosophical and say, does art require the perception of another being or the artist itself to be considered art? Art needing to be perceived.
Well, it goes back to what you're saying about point of view and perspective and the artist that was obsessed with perspective. I see now that's still very popular on social media for young people. POV, you're a something doing something. You're my crush and we're on a date. Reenacting universal thing from high school that people cringe at or look fondly back on. But a lot of people are obsessed with that POV. It's an example of people making a piece of art, trying to understand to the watcher of the TikTok that they, the creator of the TikTok, also are able to comprehend different points of view that we can all agree on. And some of these have millions of likes. People are like, oh yes, I do that too. Who's that famous artist where he's like, he's holding the ball, and it's like a picture of himself and the ball, and like all the staircases go different places.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know
the staircases like intertwining?
Yeah, yeah. Who's that?
No idea.
Okay.
No clue.
It was me.
That was you.
I was me. Oh, yeah, okay. I made that. It's interesting. You can like almost trace a line from the great perspectivist artist to a common TikToker to today.
I want to put something in the space, okay. And then I want to let it float away.
Yeah.
I had a professor who once said, right, we think of all these, when we think of artists, the colonization of the Americas by European, and how many Shakespeare's and artworks could have been lost in that? The same proportion of creativity that was happening in the West was happening all over the world, right? Maybe I'm going to just make this claim right now that creativity in human beings is universal. And the amount of creative output is universal, but it's just what we choose to focus on or what's remembered. Imagine all of the artists in the Americas that were lost because either it was a different language system, so we didn't understand it, and it was thrown away because it wasn't considered art, or it was just lost within the change over. So I just want to leave that there.
You and I are in an apartment.
Yes.
We're making something to be shown.
A part, art.
A part, an artment. Yeah. And we're making something to be shown. We've talked about this in past episodes. I believe it was when we were going to American Utopia.
Mm.
We weren't sure because we had the recording device face down. We had no idea if our conversation had been recorded. And we were saying, does it even matter? Was that conversation art, or did it have to be recorded to be art? Now, we're doing this with the intention of showing it. Sometimes these episodes sit in my computer hard drive for years and months. Mm. But they're still art, I think. But think about all the other people sitting in apartments that are either making art that will never be shown, making art that will be tried to be shown, but no one will see it, or people that are sitting there refusing to pick up the pencil, pad, marker, whatever, because they've already convinced themselves that it's not worth showing, or even making. The three lyrical verses that we get in this song, work your way through the beginning, the inception of the idea, really feeling excited about it, then having some doubts, and then totally getting defensive and throwing out the whole idea.
Yeah.
Now, do you agree with that right away, or could I dive into some of the lyrics?
Dive into some of those lyrics.
Okay, so verse one. I'm painting again. I'm cleaning again.
Mm.
I'm cleaning my brain. Saturday night, and I'm sitting around doing nothing, and a giant plane is passing outside my window, and I'm not sure if it's getting picked up on the mic. I'm sitting, and then I'm like, I have to rearrange my whole entire room. I gotta get this place together. And I'm cleaning. I'm putting it all together. Or maybe I jump up and I'm like writing. I have all these ideas right before I go to bed. It's almost that manic excitement. Mm. You're like, I'm really gonna do it this time. I'm gonna do 100 sit-ups before I go to bed. And by September, I'm gonna have a six-pack. On the last line of that first verse, I'm cleaning my brain. Do you have any reflections on that manic energy or even that last line, I'm cleaning my brain?
So much there. Such cool stuff. Let's talk about that plane that passed outside the window first.
Okay, yeah. Think?
I have ideas to share, but it is time for a classic Devin and Kevin do a bit.
Okay.
We're on the plane.
All right.
Let me just jot down.
Am I starting?
Just start.
This is your captain speaking. We are above New York, our destination, but we do not have clearance to land, so we're going to fly around New Jersey for the next 45 minutes to 60 minutes. Please sit tight. I am a good captain. Do not question that. Thank you. Over. Oh my God. Can you believe this, man? 45 minutes to 60 minutes? I mean, I just want to stretch my legs out and get on that tarmac.
I am blowing onto the window so I can draw little pictures.
Oh.
Out the window. And I'm communicating with you by picture.
Hey, man, are you listening to me? I'm trying to...
So I give you just a why. What? Just a why.
Why? Well, I guess it is a good question, as I never really asked why we're not landing. I'm just kind of thinking to myself, you're actually kind of smart there, man. But
I add an ES to say why ES is in yes, I was listening. But I do yeah.
You're agreeing with me. Well, that's actually pretty refreshing. I have a family back home, and they don't often agree with me. I mean, listen, I make mistakes as just as anyone else, but I just come back on this business trip, and you don't want to hear about this, man. We were just sitting next to each other.
All right, tell me more.
Wow, that was really fast to write. Tell me. Thanks, person sitting next to me on a plane that's actually actively facing away from me and looking out the window. I guess it all started a few years ago when me and Sarah, we just stopped communicating, man. You know, like, the kids get involved and work gets more stressful and you work more to provide for the kids. And I don't know, me and Sarah, we just kind of lost a little bit of a spark. And it just seems like we don't even know who each other are anymore. Have you ever had something like that before?
I write, why? But you wait this time because you know what you expect, and I say, yes. Yes.
Wow. I bet I'm waited this time. Well, are you married?
No.
Then how could you possibly understand?
Good question.
Well, thanks. I just want to say that you're really, really talented. I mean, you're writing these so fast and almost in this calligraphy style onto the window. I've only ever seen hearts and little words that kids write, but how did you get so good about this?
I write, I'm an artist.
You're an... Oh my god, I love art. That's one of the most important things about me is that I love art. And no one gets that. Maybe that's... Sarah doesn't get that. She thinks art is just a bunch of blocks on a page. It's not just blocks. It's life.
What is life?
Oh my god. I wish Sarah asked me some of these questions. I mean, listen, she's smart, but she's just always so involved with the children. I mean, and I'm just down in my man cave, just like fuming down there. And I don't know, I'm asking all these questions and no one's ever there to listen. And... you know, maybe I should give Sarah a break. I mean, she works really hard, and you know it, like you're married, right?
No.
Oh, you wrote that already?
Yes.
Do you think I'm a good listener?
What brought you out of your cave?
Well, I mean, I got this call from the person that I haven't talked to since high school, and they said, hey, we have this opportunity for you and in Washington. And so I flew from New York to Washington and I met them and they were really exciting, you know, like they're really exciting. I felt alive for the first time. I've never been to the West Coast. I never saw the sun set over the ocean, and they let me stay in their place. One thing led to another, and I shouldn't tell you that.
Tell me more.
Why should I tell you?
Because I'm listening.
I think I really needed to hear that.
Where are you from?
I'm from New York, born and raised, Brooklyn. People say that New York's the center of the world, and sometimes the center of the world just feels so small. But now I just feel riddled with guilt. You know, I gotta be honest, mysterious person next to me on a plane, I always wanted to be an artist, and maybe that's why I get so frustrated, is that I never really lived to my full potential. Have you ever had a feeling like that?
No.
No?
No.
Are you a successful artist?
Yes.
Would I have heard your name before?
Maybe.
Ooh. Wow. You're kind of a coy little artist, aren't you?
What are you doing on the wing of the plane? I take off my hood. I take out my AirPods. Dude, do you see that thing on the wing of the plane? I've been trying to communicate with it out the window. It's making hand signals. What is going on?
Everyone, this is your captain speaking. We are now living in one of that famous Twilight Zone episodes. There is an evil demon on the side of the plane. And we're probably going to go down. We're going to go down. Say your prayers. Make your remedies. Have your reconciliation. Thank you so much for being on the plane. Fly Delta. Recommend your friends. Over.
Oh, man. Well, I don't want to die next to a stranger. Please tell me about yourself. Where are you from?
We did die.
Yeah, we did.
We died.
Mm-hmm. Without a die.
Yeah. My character sucked. It was a bad guy. Right?
I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. I was thinking about the... I embodied my character because I was thinking so much about how I would tie the gremlin in.
Yeah.
That I was a little distracted from what you were saying.
Yeah.
It was like I was looking out the window at the gremlin.
Oh. Well, in short, seems like I was a boring Brooklynite that flew to Washington and cheated on his wife.
Man.
Really,
I wish
bad.
I was listening to that. There was a lot there. I could have gone with that somewhere.
I really thought that you were going to be Sarah, and you were going to take your hood off and be Sarah. You didn't have to be. I kind of like how you went. I think Sarah deserves better than me.
Yeah. Was Sarah a gremlin, maybe? Oh, that would be a good twist.
I bet that guy would say yes.
Yeah.
Sarah was probably fine. She was probably like a smart, good mom.
Right.
With, you know, her own problems. I mean, she's dating a loser.
I never got your name.
Maybe I'm
what
Sarah.
Was your name?
My name is... Bill.
Bill.
Yeah.
Now, if people hear the plane in the background, they'll think it was on purpose. You talked about cleaning the brain.
Yeah.
And I really interpret that as like, it was interesting how you interpreted it as it's sort of this moment, and correct me if I'm wrong, but almost like this ecstatic moment. It's good. You're creating again. You're feeling good. You're excited. I thought Cleaning Brain sort of went back to this idea of the tortured artist, because it's the idea of, like, I need to get this stuff out of my mind. Like, it's almost hurting me to keep it in there. And then the other thing I want to talk about is, like, you brought up the term mania and being manic. And I think of, like, bipolar disorder is often what people will diagnose some of the Renaissance artists or any artist through time of, like, that's a very, very popular thing, is to say these artists were bipolar. They had these moments of mania where they created, created, and created. And then these depressive moments that may have led to their eventual deaths and their suicides. And it gets into this idea that creativity is almost associated with an illness. And I don't know if that's the case, but we do. It's so much ingrained in our society because of Vasari, because of Plato, whatever, because of this idea of the tortured artist, that we refer to these states of, like, excitement and creativity as manic states.
Yeah. Going back to the differentiation between the mind and the soul, we'll often talk about, like, oh man, these musicians make such soul-touching music, but then when they lose themselves, sometimes even take their own lives, we say, oh, it's mental illness.
No, I agree. I think that we have this conception, this idea that this creative task takes a toll. And I think actually, like, you think about, like, Robert Johnson and that mythology that he made a deal with the devil at the crossroads, and that's why he became such a great guitarist. So to be able to create something great is at the expense of something else.
Now, this kind of reminds me, going back into, I want to talk about two parts of the song. So the song is broken down into four segments. It's that intro part that we open with the song. And then we go into this bridge or pre-verse before we've entered a new section, but he hasn't started singing yet. Then we go into the verse where he's talking about, you know, I'm painting again, I'm cleaning again. And then we have that big breakdown. But I feel like the intro part is reminding me a little bit of the song Mind that we talked about, how that the guitar riff kind of sounded like a hatching of an idea, a ponderance. I feel like this one is much more like a pondering, meandering, thinking side. Like, you know, it takes a long time for the words to even start.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking, like, oh, artists only, what's this song about? It makes you think before you know. So we talked about the first verse about painting and cleaning again, cleaning my brain. The second verse relates closely to what you're saying about these artists that become tortured about it, because we start the singer, the artist in question, is starting to have a lot of doubts. You know, soon I will be bitter. Soon I will be a quitter. Already saying before this song or art that they're already making is completed, they already know that soon they're going to be bitter about it and soon they're going to quit.
Yeah.
So it's kind of paradoxical talking about, like, this song that's already created. We're listening to this artist quit halfway through. Imagine if the song just ended there.
Right.
But I also do like the last line in that verse. Soon enough I'll be bitter. Soon enough I'll be a quitter. You know, you can't see it until it's finished. It's almost like all the lyrics up to that point rhymed. That one didn't rhyme. It's almost like he didn't have the end of the verse. You can't see it until it's finished. It's almost like that verse isn't finished. And not being able to finish something, to put a little bow on it and say, that's done, makes them bitter or a quitter. Well, have you ever had an experience like that? Or what do you think about that?
It's funny, because great experience I had with my sister, acts. We're looking at these Michelangelo works, right? Mm-hmm. And most of them were unfinished. And we were joking around, and we were like, everything this guy does is unfinished. What's the big deal about him, right? Like, why is he so popular? And of course you can see what he has finished, and even in what's unfinished, the amount of, I mean, his greatness as an artist, how he captures the tension and the strain of the body, whatever. But we were joking around about the fact that everything's unfinished. And that was, like, the thing about Michelangelo, is he didn't finish things. And actually all these, like, great Renaissance artists, and I think even more so, is this idea that, like Leonardo da Vinci, right? They try all these different things, these polymaths, but they never commit fully to something, and they never finish anything. And is that the sign of an artist? Is that no work is ever finished? And of course, there's stories of, like, Michelangelo going to his old statues and destroying them because he's not happy with them. Or purposely, deliberately leaving them very unfinished in a very rough state. And I wonder if that's meant to show that no artwork is ever complete. Thinking about, as we were talking, art is an iterative process, and you brought up Mind, and I think it's so cool when you do your renditions of songs, because I think you add a totally new spin to them. And what I mean by that is, like, your intro, how you redo the songs for the podcast. And what was so cool about Artists Only specifically is that two albums, this is off More Songs About Buildings and Food, and you talked about Mind, which is about off Fear of Music, and your rendition of Artists Only sounded a lot like something on Fear of Music, like it would fit in perfectly there. I'm thinking of songs like Air and Paper and Mind. and it adds a whole new level to the song, a whole new depth to it. And I don't think that recreating something and then taking it in your own direction isn't an act of creativity. And actually, let's put this on the shelf, too. Two things I want to put on the shelf. This is totally separate, but I'm going to put it up there if we want it later. What about art without artists, anonymous works? Because that gets into our idea of, does an artist need to share? But the other thing I want to put on there is AI art. And those artists who use AI as a jumping off point to create.
Michelangelo and other artists of that era never committing something to something fully. Maybe it's because their minds are working so fast and they're innovating so quickly that it's hard to commit. But an example of a musician that released quote-unquote finished art but continues to revisit them and revamp them is Will Toledo of Car Seat Headrest. Not sure how familiar you are with them, but I love Car Seat Headrest a lot, and they often re-release work. Many of these songs that you can find in their discography go back to like three different albums, one from 2012, and then it's re-released in 2016, and then when you hear them do it live now, it's very different.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan is often cited as that, but honestly, I don't really like the renditions of Bob Dylan songs when he messes around with them, but you know, that's him. He can do whatever he wants. But Will Toledo like brings new life into them. It's very lo-fi, and then he's like, well, I want to make it like studio polished.
Yeah.
And then he revisits them again, and hitting them at different points, I think, just shows really beautifully how art can grow, art can be revisited, and it's never fully done. It can continue to grow and change. There's an album called Twin Fantasy, which he fully released twice.
Right.
One in 2011, and then again in 2016, I believe. And the new version is just beautiful. I mean, it's the true version of how it should sound, but when you go back and listen to that 2011 version, there's something beautiful and like heartbreaking about the really lo-fi version.
Yeah.
If it tells you all, we have breakdowns sometimes.
And it almost, for me, like looking at it in backwards chronological order, says like, oh, maybe I should release something. If I release it now in this basement, you know, bedroom pop version, maybe I can recreate it when I'm older and revisit it. At least it exists. I put it out into the world. It doesn't mean that I will not struggle with it or be a little insecure about releasing it, but at least it's made and I can always come back to it. Or I can just put a pin in it and just be like, hey, in 5 years when I come back to that, my voice isn't going to be good. I'm obviously a better guitar player. It kind of sucks in comparison, but like at least I made it. For me, that has a lot of merit and is a really big driver. And Will Toledo of Car Seat Headrest has always been an influence on me for that. Of course, the music is excellent and simple and makes me want to learn it and play it, but just the revisiting it and constantly evolving these new songs has always been amazing to me. It's something that we don't really get with Talking Heads. Because a lot of their stuff is very polished. And, you know, example of Stop Making Sense the movie is that, like, oh, we're not going to tour anymore. There's going to be no more live versions of this. We have the live version. It's perfect. We're pretty much done touring. Oh, and the reason I brought this up, forgive me, about Will Toledo and Car Seat Headrest is that they have a live album called Commit Yourself Completely.
Right.
And there's a line from the song that's pretty much about, like, if you want to do anything in this world, you have to commit yourself completely to it. I'm passionate about Car Seat Headrest and evolving art.
It's interesting that you said, like, the Talking Heads never revisits their songs, because I was thinking a cool connection about this is, like, on More Songs About Building and Food, they have the 2005 Mastered Edition, and they have all these alternate versions of their songs.
Mm.
So, and, like, totally different songs, too. They have, literally, like, Thank You for Sending Me an Angel country version. I think I mentioned that before. It's a totally different version of the song. It's really cool, and I would consider it its own independent song, even if the lyrics are the same. You concluded with that quote, but when you were telling me about him at first, I thought what was so strong about him, what was so powerful, is this idea that you release what you have with the intention, with the understanding that you can always go back to it. So you're releasing something, and maybe that's the only thing someone hears of you. And that's something to deal with, and that's something that you may have to grapple with. But the fact that art is never incomplete, and I think that's very important for people who create art to consider, because I think there's always this reluctance to actually share your art, because I could do better, it's not perfect. But understanding the fact that you can always revisit it, you can always revise it and release something new, I think is great. But then he has this quote about being fully committed, and I'm like, oh, well, is he fully committed to the art he is producing if he changes it later on? But at the same time, I don't know if those are mutually exclusive. I think you can be fully committed to something that is incomplete.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great point. I mean, you can talk about that in the form of, like, a relationship.